This is Audible.
Omega. Omega Series Book 1. Written by Lizzie Ford. Narrated by Shiromi Arserio. Chapter 1. Alessandra. No man or woman born, coward or brave, can shun his destiny. Homer. For once, Tyche, could you grant me a little luck? I slowed before reaching my favorite meadow in the forest, my heart racing and chest heaving. A grin stretched my cheeks, and I stopped to listen for the boy I challenged to a race. I heard voices. Male, and at least 2 females. I guess not, I muttered aloud. The damn nymphs had him. My giddy excitement faded. I was the one who managed to lure a teen boy from the nearby campground into our forest, and, as usual, the nymphs stole him. I couldn't compete with the beautiful women. There were 30 of them my age, all unusually perfect, feminine, and graceful. Even my guardian said they weren't normal. And we'd coined the term nymphs to describe the other girls at the isolated orphanage where I lived under the thumb of strict priests. The other girls were all my age, too, each of them destined for positions befitting their beauty, according to the priests. It was disgusting. I couldn't stand them. I was an athlete, uncomfortable in anything but tennis shoes and yoga pants, terrible in school and bearing a scar from childhood across one cheek. No matter how much makeup I plastered over it, or how far forward I brushed my dark locks, I wasn't able to hide it. I was always late to class, always the last to understand whatever torture the priests were teaching us, always trying to catch the first light of aurora in the reflecting pool, or scaling a hill to watch the last rays of Hesperides. The nymphs laughed at me. I hated them for it, and me for not being able to fit in no matter what I did. I couldn't change the fact I was shorter, smaller, and otherwise imperfect compared to them. Lose another one, Lissa? Yeah. I heard my guardian's approach and looked up into his scarred, ugly face. A mountain of a man with bright red hair. Heracles had never once understood why I was so disappointed to lose every guy I fancied to the nymphs. If a man can't outrun you, I can't bring him home with me. House rules, I know. It was a stupid rule. Surely there had to be one man somewhere who shared my deer-like agility. My guardian chuckled. He was so handsome, I whined with a sigh, recalling the gorgeous brown eyes and smile of the teenage boy I'd met today. When he had looked at me, my insides turned fluttery and warm. He almost outran me, too. Only because you slowed down. I rolled my eyes and spun away, headed towards the compound in the middle of the forest where we all lived. So what? Everyone here has kissed a boy, and I can't even look at one without the stupid nymphs taking him away. They just bat their eyes and the boys fall all over them. I made a show of shaking my hips and blinking rapidly in mockery. I've never kissed a boy. You know what I mean. Heracles was a jerk sometimes. His rules were designed to prevent me from ever having a boyfriend. My interests generally lay in martial arts and sports. If not for the nymphs conspiring to steal any boys I lured away from the campground and always taunting me about everything, I wouldn't look twice at a boy. But I shared one sole trait with the nymphs. Competitiveness. I wanted so badly to best them at something and earn enough respect not to be bullied every day for the rest of my life.
You could try studying harder, Heracles suggested.
Right, like that's going to get me a boyfriend.
There is more to life than boys and whatever else it is your head's full of, Heracles reminded me. You don't need a man anyway. You can take care of yourself. I've trained you to survive anything.
I know I don't need one. I want one so the nymphs stop laughing at me. Just for a day. Then I'd let him go like you free the rabbits I catch.
You noticed? I arched my eyebrow at him. I figured it out after I caught the same one every day for a week when I was, like, 16. You know the nymphs don't have to hunt rabbits, don't you? They don't have to run every day, or build their own campfires and shelters on the weekend. They get to go to town, Heracles, and see movies. I sighed, tortured by my miserable existence. Can I be normal? Just for one weekend? Normal people aren't prepared for their world to change, or to face the trials awaiting them. The zombie apocalypse isn't coming. The priests say the world has never known a time of greater peace and prosperity, and the gods are happier than ever. An apocalypse is not required to announce itself, he stated. I bit my tongue. I knew better than to argue with Heracles. He was of a singular mind and convinced the world was going to end any day. Nothing I'd ever said over the past 12 years had dented his obsession with self-reliance and survival. I learned to hunt game bigger than me, forage for berries, survive in extreme weather conditions, and other skills the nymphs, and even my teachers often ridiculed. Sometimes he blindfolded me, or hobbled one leg or arm, so I had to survive for a weekend alone in the forest with simulated physical impediments. He first dropped me off in part of the forest alone with no compass when I was 9. I bawled for a day until he came to get me. Instead of taking me back, we stayed in the forest, and he taught me to navigate by the stars. No one understood why he made me do these things, least of all me. I obeyed him because, above all else, I loved my Heracles, as weird as he was. While we were accepted here, we didn't fit in at the school filled with nymphs and priests. We had to stick together, two dented peas in a misshapen pod. The man you want to kiss will be able to outrun, outhunt, and outsmart you. When you meet him, you can marry him. Until then, no man will do, Heracles said. I don't want to marry anyone, I said. I just want to kiss him. Then you can kiss the man who catches you. His conditions for me seeing someone were impossibilities. Heracles alone was the only man who could keep up with me. It was his way of saying I'd never have a boyfriend as long as I lived under his roof. I glanced up at the green canopy overhead. The blue sky resembled puzzle pieces from this angle, and not a cloud was in sight on this warm spring day. What torture did he have in store for me on such a beautiful Friday? I had to climb a rope or navigate whatever obstacle course he built before I was allowed to go to bed at night. Weekends were worse. I was exiled to the forest for more survival training until Sunday night. He was conditioning and preparing me for something. I had no idea what, and I suspected he was just a little off. A former Olympian, Heracles was the toughest, most honorable person I had ever known. He swept the annual Olympics for 3 years in a row before he stumbled upon me, rescued me from the house fire that killed my parents, and brought us here. He didn't respect anything but physical prowess. He could barely read, and he had an almost allergic reaction to discussing anything regarding emotions. But he was my hero, in every sense of the word. To this day, I was unable to recall what exactly happened the night I turned 6, except it involved Heracles catching me when I fell from the sky. Why or how I was flying, I didn't know. I still occasionally dreamt of falling, but no fire. My life changed that night. Heracles was unwilling to talk about it, even after I turned 18 and was considered an adult by everyone but him. Heracles tugged the sleeve I tucked under my bra strap back down over the strange birthmark on my bicep that looked eerily like a double omega. The omega was the final letter in the Greek alphabet, or, according to Heracles, a sign of Armageddon. Keep this hidden, he reminded me. I know. I pulled both sleeves down so I didn't look stupid with only one up. Picking my way through the forest back towards the compound where we lived, I considered the topic I'd been meaning to broach to him, but hadn't quite figured out the best way yet. "We haven't talked about graduation," I started. "It's in 3 weeks. The world might end tomorrow. You should not think too far beyond today."
"Oh my gods, Heracles. I'm 18 and I'm graduating in 3 weeks. I want to go home."
Too late, I realized I told him what I had hoped to discuss in a calmer manner. I didn't look back at him, but focused on the path at my feet. "You know there's nothing for you there."
"So you've told me every time I asked. But I have to go somewhere," I pointed out. "College? Waitress at a fast food joint? Holy Zeus, I'd become an initiate at a temple."
"No temple would have you." It wasn't the first time I'd heard that, either. The priests didn't consider me disciplined, or selfless, or motivated enough to refer me for a position in the elite initiate corps. Half of the nymphs were headed to temples of the Greek gods. The others were being sent to the households of influential politicians and nobles around the world. I could speak English, Greek, and French like they did, a requirement to become an initiate. But my grades were sorry, and my temperament deemed too unsuitable to be placed in a position where diplomacy and manipulation were required. "You have more freedom here than the average person living beneath the thumb of the Supreme Magistrate will ever know," Heracles said. "Why do you wish to leave?"
"Because that's what kids who graduate high school do. They get a life. Join the real world."
"Where did you learn this? Television?" He was genuinely confused. He rarely spoke of his childhood, but I'd assessed over the years that his own upbringing had been very different. "I must talk to the priests about censoring the programs they let you girls watch. They already monitor everything we watch."
"I guess I just want to know, where do we go next?"
"Because we are leaving, right?" I asked. Sensing I was doomed to work at a fast food joint the rest of my life, if he let me leave at all.
"We are, but I'm not yet certain where."
"You've only had 12 years to figure it out," I shot back with some exasperation. "I want to see the world, Heracles, or at least somewhere beyond this forest."
"Until I know for sure,
stay inside the boundaries." I wasn't allowed to travel beyond the red cord lining the perimeter of the priest's quiet property. Since arriving when I was 6, I had never left. The nymphs went to town every weekend to shop or watch movies or eat food and whatever else they did that Heracles didn't approve of. It had to be more fun than navigating the forest in the rain with nothing more than a poncho and a knife. Meanwhile, Heracles timed how long it took me to get home to make sure I wasn't slacking before the inevitable end of the world. We reached the edge of the greens where the compound proper started, daydreaming about what was to come when I finally graduated. I missed Heracles stiffening.
"This isn't good," he said.
Blinking out of my thoughts, I stopped to see him staring at the long driveway leading from the road to the massive manor house that acted as our home and school. The priests had erected 2 small temples, one for a Titan god named Lelantos, and another for the Olympic goddess Artemis behind the school beside the stables. An extra car was parked in front of the school, a black sedan with darkened windows. "We've had a lot of visitors lately," I said, unconcerned. "I imagine the employers of the nymphs are coming to interview them."
"It's not an employer."
The car wasn't there to take me away to the real world, and I doubted it was the first zombie from the apocalypse we were preparing for. Therefore, the vehicle's appearance meant nothing to me.
"Okay, I'm going to my room."
Heracles paid me no heed and jogged towards the car. I circled the house to the back entrance where the stairwell leading directly to our rooms was located. I took the stairs 2 at a time, and strode down the landing of the girl's wing towards my room.
Lissa!
Someone called out as I passed.
What?
I paused and stepped back, peering into the room of one of the nymphs, a willowy blonde named Leandra. She was finishing her makeup and wore a sparkly party dress.
Want to go to town with us tonight?
Leandra asked innocently. I hate my life, I muttered. She laughed. But I didn't leave. Playing on her television were news clips of the footage I'd missed 2 weeks ago when I spent my 18th birthday in the middle of the forest, shivering and buried beneath leaves in the final cold snap of spring, during one of Heracles' weekend tests. The priest censored everything that reached us from the outside world, including the news. They removed what they didn't want us to see before letting us watch what was left.
Hey, is that...
I asked and walked into her room.
Yeah.
A wistful note was in Leandra's voice. It took a lot to make the perfect, beautiful nymphs envy someone else. For once, I understood where she was coming from. The Silent Queen, I said in awe, gazing at the television. The Queen of Greece, known as the Silent Queen because she hadn't been seen or heard from until this month, was plastered everywhere on the news. A girl my age, she was stunning, with white blonde hair, pale blue eyes, and a jawline sharp enough to cut ice. Wow. She's just a symbol of the unity of gods and mankind. No real power. But even Leandra sounded enthralled by the woman on the television. She can't speak. She gave her first address in sign language. Wow, I murmured again. In a sparkling diamond tiara and radiant silk dress, the teen looked more godlike than human. She was flanked by the supreme magistrate, the powerful political representative of humanity, and the hooded and masked supreme priest, the god's advocate on Earth. The three most powerful figures in the world were known as the Sacred Triumvirate, and each had his or her own private security force, according to the priests, which was how they balanced their power. I couldn't look away from the Silent Queen. The priests had drilled the history and importance of the hereditary bloodline into us since we arrived. The Silent Queen's ancestors were touched by the gods, and it was said only she could appeal directly to them in a way that defied even the priesthood. Throughout history, once Greece fell as a global power, the most powerful nation on the planet was given the sacred duty of protecting the bloodline and housing the royal leader, which was how she ended up here in the United States. She's amazing. I'm sure she's been photoshopped for television, Leandra said, somewhat defensively. I rolled my eyes. The nymphs knew they were special. There was something strange about 30 orphaned women of extreme beauty and charm, all born within 3 months of me, all under the strict protection of an orphanage run by priests who didn't hold weekly worship ceremonies but taught us instead the old ways, as they called them. They were positioning the nymphs in places of eventual power, where they could then share the old ways with others. If our world was strange, we had no idea. As far as we knew, this place and its customs were normal. I've been assigned to her court, Leandra said.
Seriously?
Yep. It made sense. Leandra was a hair prettier than the others, and quite a bit smarter, according to the priests. I was suddenly crushed that I might end up taking food orders from hungover college students the rest of my life, while the others went off to positions I could only dream of. Where are you going? She asked, green eyes finding me. To live with the mountain man on some isolated peak? He's not a mountain man, I said, bristling. He's the greatest Olympic athlete in history. A disgraced one who ditched his wealthy benefactor to live in a forest with us. He's absolutely mad, and he's turned you wild and ruined any chance you had at a decent future. My anger bubbled. I knew better than to cause a fight. I'd stopped that nonsense when I was 15.
But sometimes I wanted to sock the pretty, perfect women around me. My biggest issue with Leandra wasn't that she was mean. It was that she was often right, and her words about Heracles stung. Something was wrong with him, and I sometimes thought maybe that meant there was something wrong with me, too. It was why I didn't turn out like Leandra and the others, and why I was definitely not going to the Silent Queen's court. I squinted to see the ticker at the bottom of the news. Civil unrest grows. Supreme Magistrate places 5 more states under martial rule over Cease's objections. That made about 40 states under martial rule by my count. The priest refused to tell us about the civil unrest when we asked, but sometimes, like today, tiny pieces of information slipped through their censoring and made it to us. I was dying to know what the world outside our boring forest was like. "When I get to court, I'll find you a job chopping wood or something," Leandra said with a wide grin. I stormed off to my room, followed by the sound of her laughter. I loved Heracles like the father I couldn't remember. But sometimes, I was really embarrassed to be me. I hated that feeling. I had trouble making friends, more so because Heracles often had some bizarre requirement for me to hang out with someone. Boys had to be able to outrun me, and girls had to solve a riddle. No one ever succeeded at his challenges, except for the perfect little nymphs who hung out with me only to laugh at me. Basically, I was always alone, and he seemed determined to keep it that way. I felt even more isolated knowing the nymphs all had plans of where they were going after graduation, and I didn't. I went to my room and closed the door, sitting on my bed. I had barely pushed off my shoes before a tap sounded at the door. "Come in," I said, and tossed myself onto my back. "Lissa, I have to leave for the weekend." Startled, I immediately sat back up. "Where? Why?" I demanded of Heracles, who had never left me for half a day, let alone a weekend. "Is something wrong?" "No." His features were scarred beyond recognition, his smile lopsided and frightening. Everyone else winced when he looked their direction. But I loved every knotted scar and burnt piece of flesh on his face. He was my protector, my friend. The only father figure I knew. He'd always been beautiful to me. "You are to travel to the eastern boundary and back this weekend. Here's your surprise pack. Open it when you get there." He tossed the satchel onto the bed beside me. Ugh. I eyed it warily. He, no doubt, had planned another weekend of torture. I'd probably have a hat and spoon and nothing more to survive 2 days in the forest alone. Technically, I should have had only 3 more weeks of this madness remaining. Except, I had a feeling his plans were always going to trump mine. "You're sure there's nothing wrong? You've never left me before." "I'm going to scout someplace where we might settle after you graduate," he told me. I looked up, thrilled. "I won't be trapped here for the rest of my life?" "No, but you might one day wish you had been." He frowned. Every once in a while, my guardian had a mood I didn't understand. Naturally open, upbeat, and focused, his features were now grave and unreadable. I studied him, wishing I could read his thoughts or make him smile again. "Something is wrong," I assessed. "Not wrong. It's always complicated to move from one place to another." He shook his head. "Anyway, you have a treasure hunt to complete this weekend. Your tasks are in the bag. You'll not wish to wait until morning. I put up several traps and obstacles." I muttered curses I'd learned from him under my breath. As long as we had been together, I never really knew what to expect on these adventures. "I'll see you Sunday night," I said reluctantly. "Heed the boundaries and rules." "I know. I pulled on my shoes obediently and a camouflage windbreaker. When I stood, he smiled at me again.
Good girl. Don't get lost out there.
It wasn't possible, and we both knew it. I'd been over every inch of that forest multiple times.
Have fun in town.
He turned and left. I grabbed the bag and left my room for the forest once more. No boys, no future, no town. There were days when I wanted out of my life so badly I wanted to scream. Chapter 2. Small opportunities are often the beginning of great enterprises. Demosthenes. Nothing bad had ever happened in 5 minutes, right? Just as the sun sank below the horizon, I reached the red cord marking the boundaries of the priest's forest refuge. This end of the woods stopped before a natural lake surrounded by hills. I perched on a tree stump inside the boundaries, gazing at the serene lake with a combination of longing and frustration. 100 meters. I ran 20 times that distance 5 times a week. It would take me under 5 minutes to run to the lake, strip off my shoes and socks to dip my toes in the water, and run back. I chafed sometimes at the restrictions Heracles put me under. I cared for him too much to want to disappoint him. But tonight, knowing he was gone and I'd be leaving here soon too, I just wanted to throw everything aside and be in control of my life for 5 minutes to see what it was like. With Leandra's laughter still in my thoughts, in my frustration with this place at a pitch, I was tired of being excluded and ridiculed for being different. No one would see me if I just stepped past the boundaries for a split second. Heracles had left, and the nymphs were in town by now, so they couldn't report me. I approached the red rope and nudged my toes up against it, then looked around. I half expected there to be a siren or electrical shock or something after the constant reminders from Heracles and the priests never to leave the woods. Nothing happened. I stepped on the red cord. Still nothing. I stepped over the physical boundary of my world, and a thrill went through me. Not only was there no alarm, but I didn't feel guilty or bad for doing it. Emotions that might derail me from continuing. I stayed where I was, my heels butting up against the cord, and lifted my gaze to the lake. The possibilities were endless. My whole life started right here and now. I laughed at my overdramatic thoughts, realizing nothing was about to change except I might upset Heracles. That alone made me hesitate. I loved my crazy mountain man guardian, and it bothered me to think I was going to make him mad by doing this. Assuming he finds out. The stubbornly independent side of me he spent hours trying to exhaust with physical activity knew there was only one way he could find out, and I wasn't about to tell him. At least, not for 3 weeks. Maybe after graduation, when we were on our way to the Burger God I was going to spend my life working at, I'd tell him of the one time in 12 years when I defied him to dip my toes in the lake. Crouching like it was a race, I breathed in deeply, then bolted. I was completely alone, competing only with myself. I laughed as I sprinted, tickled beyond anything to be completely free, if only for mere minutes. Sprinting to the lake, I vowed to keep to my internal promise of not spending more than a few minutes off the property and threw myself to the ground. Wrenching off my shoes and socks, I scooted to the edge of the lake and dangled my legs over the rock on which I sat. The moment my feet dipped beneath the cool surface, my world seemed to slow to a stop. I leaned over, marveling at the sensations. It shouldn't have been, but this was somehow different than a pool. This felt alive. Holy Poseidon, I murmured. The sensation of being united with something living moved through my system. A wave that ran from my toes to the tip of my head, in rhythm with the water, then outward, rippling the grass around the lake. I shivered. Fascinated, I peered into the dark depths of the lake. My feet caused small waves that were pushed back by the natural tides of the lake. Deep within the depths, I caught a glimmer of something odd. I squinted in the fading light. They weren't fish or rocks or anything. The lake was too deep to see its bottom, but I swore I saw ribbons of soft colors twisting like smoke through the waters. Their movements were too precise to be dictated by the tides. I blinked, and they were gone. Realizing my 5 minutes were up, I lifted my feet and dried them on my pants legs, then replaced my shoes and socks. I didn't feel nearly as urgent about returning to the forest where I'd spent most of my life and ambled back. It was strange, but I could almost feel the tide of the lake still moving through me, rocking from toes to head and back again, before rustling the grass around me. It was gentle, soothing, and peaceful. I was an extension of the water, and it felt natural. Nice. I had nothing to compare the experience to and couldn't help wondering if I'd spent my entire life cut off from such small pleasures. It made me despise the nymphs even more, since they probably spent every weekend feeling whatever this was out in the real world. I stepped over the red rope, and the internal rocking stopped. I realized it hadn't only been the lake I felt. The breeze that stirred the surface of the lake stopped at the barrier, too, and its gentle touch on my skin fell away. I missed them almost as soon as I left them. Facing the lake once more, I smiled. If nothing else, I now knew one of the secrets of the world outside my boundaries. And it was beautiful. Beyond happy with my secret adventure, I moved 5 meters from the cord to an area big enough for a fire and built a little campsite. My assigned kit contained a canteen of water and the ingredients for s'mores. Heracles' thoughtfulness only added to my happiness. I went through my tasks of finding shelter, starting a fire, and stretching out on the ground to watch the stars with a smile plastered on my face. After my treats, I let the fire die out and retreated to a small shelter I'd created from a poncho and tree branches. I had brought a sleeping bag and crawled into it. My mind was on the lake, on my future, and how incredible it was going to be to leave the compound once and for all and join the rest of the world. I slid into deep, contented sleep. Something awoke me shortly before dawn. I opened my eyes, senses trained on the world outside my makeshift tent. Animals use their instincts and intuition better than humans, and Heracles had emphasized being more like the locals when camping out, so I listened in silence and stillness. An animal was rustling quietly, but it wasn't close, and it wasn't in the forest, which meant it was large if I could hear it this far off. The sounds came from the direction of the lake. I crept out of my sleeping bag and covered the distance quickly between me and the boundary. Reaching the stump where I often perched to gaze at the lake, I squatted on top of it and stared. It was an animal, but nothing like I'd seen before. Monster was probably a better description. The creature had a wingspan of 10 meters, and was the size of a linebacker with the long, lean musculature and grace of a feline. It stood on 2 legs and had 2 arms that looked pretty human. The sound I heard was of its long tail tapping the brush lining the bank of the lake. Its skin was an unnatural shade of stone gray. One of its ears stuck out at an odd angle, and its eyes glowed like blue jewels in the night. It had fangs, talons, and a barbed tail, and its eyes were positioned facing forward, all of which were characteristics of a predator of some sort, and not something I cared to confront. It stood where I had sat earlier, peering at the lake, at the surrounding area, at the sky. It crouched beside the lake, tail tapping against the dirt. It was horrifying and magnificent. I couldn't have imagined a more incredible combination of man and beast. The raw power it exuded in each tiny, controlled movement exceeded anything a human or traditional predator possessed. This is a dream. It had to be. No such creature existed unless it was some sort of undiscovered animal or leftover dinosaur. And if that were the case, I didn't think this would be the first time I'd seen it. I spent too many days and nights in the forest for it to belong here. Where it had originated, and why it chose to stop here, I couldn't begin to guess. Intelligence was in its thoughtful movement and visual exploration of the environment. The man-beast hybrid wasn't something I was able to explain away. I pinched my arm to ensure I was awake. The light sting wasn't much of a reassurance when faced with a monster from a nightmare. It stood and unfurled its wings. They were charcoal in color, lined with black fur, beautiful and wide, shaped neither like a bat's nor a bird's, but something in between. With ease that left me astonished, one flap of the mighty wings propelled the creature into the sky effortlessly. Within seconds, it had disappeared into the clouds above. For once, I was grateful for the red cords marking the boundaries of the property. The priest claimed they would protect us from unwanted attention. The creature hadn't glanced once in my direction, which made me think the ropes were working. Or maybe I was blessed by Taiki for once. I stood on the tree stump, trying to get another glimpse of the beast and the clouds, without success. My gaze returned to the lake. What other surprises awaited me in the outside world? Was this creature the reason why the priests insisted I never cross the boundaries? And if so, had I risked being eaten or killed when I left the forest earlier for the lake? I shuddered, this time out of dread. If the priests knew, the creature would be on the list of animals to avoid that they kept posted in the main schoolhouse as a warning of what wildlife not to engage. No one, except maybe Heracles, was going to believe me if I told them about the creature. Easing back from the edge of the property, I returned to my shelter, but wasn't able to sleep again. Not with the knowledge something like that was hovering in the clouds above the forest. I silently thanked Heracles for his survival training and insistence I carry a knife with me wherever I went. I clutched it in my hand and remained still until dawn swept across the sky. Only then did I start to relax again and packed up my tent. Bad things didn't happen during daylight, I told myself. I clung to the childish notion and decided to disobey Heracles for a second time. I was going back to the school today without completing my assigned treasure hunt. I wasn't spending another night in the forest when some creature big enough to eat me was on the loose. Bears were one thing, but this... this was something even I knew better than to mess with. It was a 4-hour trek back to the center of the property. I hiked through the forest, always sensitive to the creatures living here. While I'd catch and eat them if I had to, I also wasn't going to disturb their daily lives by leaving messes or destroying their homes. Heracles was strict about appreciating and respecting the domain of Artemis and Dionysus and all their children. My mind kept returning to the creature. I wasn't able to flush the image of the terrifying creature standing beside the lake from my thoughts. It didn't seem to be a part of nature. Yet it had to be. Everything was, except for the gods and goddesses, who are still part of nature, just a different nature from ours. Lost in thought, I didn't notice the drone of an airplane until it roared overhead. I looked up, unaccustomed to hearing them quite so low, but not alarmed to see the plane. A municipal airport was nearby. It was how the priests brought in guest speakers and other visitors from outside the area. Unconcerned, I continued on my hike, unable to prevent the occasional look over my shoulder. I'd hear the creature if it was following me, but similar to my hope that bad things didn't happen during the day, I wasn't fully convinced I was alone. The tip of the roof of the manor house was soon visible through the trees. Suddenly, the ground beneath my feet quaked. I caught myself against a tree and was about to curse under my breath when an explosion ripped through the air. Fire belched into the sky from the direction of the compound. I stared at it and the black smoke chasing it before bolting towards home. The pounding of my heart filled my ears, and I mentally went through one of the checklists Heracles forced me to recite during exercises. I was assessing what the sound was and how many priests were present during the weekend when I reached the edge of the greens and stopped. The mansion was in flames. The small plane had smashed straight into it before exploding. Smoke billowed off the building into the sky. Two priests in brown robes stood, stunned, in the greens. I hesitated only a moment before racing to them.
"Father Christopoulos!" I cried.
Both faced me.
"Thank the gods," Father Christopoulos breathed. The eldest of the priests, he was around 50, bald and beefy.
"Are you hurt? Heracles and I have a stash of medical. Come with me." Rather than race towards the fire and those who might need help, Father Christopoulos snatched my arm and hurried towards the forest, back from the direction I just came.
"But," I twisted, worried about those who might be trapped in the wreckage or fire.
"You are not to leave the forest.
Father, I can—"
"You are not to leave the forest."
This time he squeezed my arm tightly enough that my attention went from what was happening behind us to his face. His features were blanched, his eyes bulging, and jaw clenched so hard the muscles of his cheeks ticked. We reached the forest, and he pushed me behind the tree line. Whipping off the red cord belt he wore, he tossed it at the edge of the greens.
"Do not cross the boundary," he ordered.
"What? But
Alessandra."
He snatched both my arms and shook me until I met his gaze.
"Do not step past the boundary, or all we have done here for the past 12 years is destroyed."
I had no idea what he was talking about, but his face and unusual intensity scared me. The normally calm priest was freaking out.
"Okay," I said, concerned. "Do you want to know where our medical stash is?"
"We have our own."
Without another word, he whirled and hurried back to join the other priest, who had moved to help a third stumble out of the collapsing building. I watched helplessly, hating to be excluded like usual. The red belt near my feet was expanding and stretching the way the boundaries did whenever the priests adjusted them. The cords retained some sort of unidentified magic, and the red rope snaked quickly away to outline the perimeter of the greens. I didn't understand the importance of a barrier that didn't actually prevent people from coming and going, and paced, aching to help. It wasn't the apocalypse, but I was trained for emergency response and dressing wounds caused by pretty much anything. Instead, I was sidelined again by the priests, left out when I should have been helping. All of the nymphs and most of the staff were in town for the day. The 5 priests who stayed back were soon all accounted for, with only one injured. I watched them huddle and speak, guessing they needed to figure out how to house 30 nymphs now that a plane had gone down in the middle of the compound. The building imploded completely into piles of rubble. Everything that was flammable continued to burn. I stressed about wanting to help until the fire department came and put out the blaze. One priest was taken away in an ambulance. The others were checked out by paramedics and released. I stayed in the forest, saddened to see my home of 12 years destroyed, while also hoping this was the impetus to enter the real world and go to a hotel for the rest of the weekend. I nibbled on food I'd taken for my camping trip. The firemen left the smoldering ruins of our home around 1 o'clock, and I stared glumly at the scene before me. I began to think the priest had forgotten about me when Father Christopoulos pointed in my direction. Perking up, I stood as my favorite priest, Father Ellis, headed towards me. "Is Father Tebald okay?" I asked immediately. "His arm was broken, and he had some burns," Father Ellis replied. "But he will be fine. The EMTs said he'd be released tonight."
"And the rest of you?"
"We are well, Lissa," he assured me.
"Why wouldn't Father Christopoulos let me help?" I demanded. "I know how to handle the situation."
"Well, I thought I did, at least. Heracles always said I was too eager to want to try my hand at disaster, that there were things I would never understand until I went through them." Father Ellis smiled. "I know," he said kindly. Mollified, I drew a deep breath.
"No survivors from the plane?"
"There was no one aboard to survive. The plane crash was meant to break the boundaries. Hence the new one." He pointed to the red cord near my feet. I arched an eyebrow at him.
"Someone did this on purpose?"
"Lissa, I need to ask you something, and I need you to tell me the truth," he said quietly.
"I always do."
"Did you leave the boundaries at any point recently? Or ever?" My flushing face answered his question. "I need to know when and where," he said.
"Does it matter right now? I mean, shouldn't we figure out where we're going to put all the nymphs? I doubt they can survive in the forest," I pointed out.
"We have it all figured out. The girls will stay in town. You will remain in the forest for now."
I frowned, dismayed. "That's not fair."
"Now, where did you step outside the boundaries?"
Father Ellis was always good at deflating my anger in tantrums. It was hard to oppose him when he was quiet, gentle, and genuinely the nicest priest on staff.
"By the lake," I sighed and pointed in the general direction.
"When?"
"Sundown, last night." He appeared thoughtful, gaze on the charred ruins of our home.
"It was only for, like, 10 minutes, I added quickly. "I wanted to dip my toes in the water."
"Did you?" I nodded.
"How was it?"
he asked, almost absently.
"Amazing. So much better than the pool."
"Did anything happen at the lake?" My mouth dropped open.
It wasn't possible for him to know about the creature, yet he was asking the question like he did.
At my silence, he met my gaze with another of his calm smiles. "Whatever you did, it's okay, Lissa. I just need to know," he said.
"I didn't do anything," I replied. "I dipped my feet, then went back to the forest. Then I drifted off and shifted feet, not sure how to tell him about the creature.
Well, I saw something at the lake early this morning."
He waited, brows furrowing.
"It was a creature of some sort. Wings, tail, standing on 2 feet.
I cleared my throat.
"This creature, did you speak to it?"
"Oh, no. I stayed in the forest. It was kind of freaky."
By his expression, this wasn't the news he was expecting, though he wasn't surprised either.
"Grotesque."
"It wasn't gross. I'd probably say terrifying."
"No, Lissa," he said with another patient smile.
It's called a grotesque. It's like a gargoyle, only different.
A gargoyle, I repeated.
It was ugly enough. Never heard of gargoyles flying around, though. The grotesque has been rumored to exist in the service of the Triumvirate. It's seen every once in a while, but its existence has never been confirmed. Okay. The old man's lost it. Then again, I was the one who witnessed said creature. An awkward silence fell between us. My gaze drifted once more to the school.
So what's the plan? I asked. Have classes in a tent or something?
The plan is to move the girls out to their assignments immediately, instead of waiting for graduation, and for you to go to a similar site.
But I'm supposed to graduate and move on, too. Why do I need to go to another stupid school?
Father Christopoulos will tell you.
He glanced at me. For the first time since arriving, I sensed he was hiding something. I had always found the monks and their dedication to the old ways mysterious, but I never felt like their secrets pertained to me. Whatever he wasn't saying about me, however, snagged my attention. The remaining three priests approached. I bowed my head to each of them as was appropriate. They exchanged looks I wasn't able to decipher, but which made me uneasy. Father Christopoulos addressed me.
Alessandra, why don't you take us to your and Heracles' favorite spot in the forest? I think it's a meadow?
I nodded. My pulse was starting to race at the calm request. I'd wanted the attention of the priests my whole life and watched them dote over the nymphs instead. Now that the four of them were focused on me, I suddenly wanted them to leave me alone.
This way, I said quietly and spun on my heel, leading them deeper into the forest.
Was Heracles in the house or something?
I asked uneasily, unable to identify why they wanted to go to my favorite place. No one answered. They simply followed me. I swallowed hard, edgy and scared that something had happened to Heracles. For all my complaining about the forest adventures and him not letting me near boys, I loved him. He was the only father I really remembered, and I wasn't going to handle it well if something happened to him.
Maybe they know that.
Maybe that was why four priests were following me, in case I went crazy, and they had to tie me up or something. My sense of dread grew as we approached the meadow where Heracles and I trained. My steps slowed out of fear of the bad news they'd give me once we reached it. Setting foot in the meadow, I faced them with my arms crossed.
Is Heracles okay? I asked,
and braced myself for bad news.
He is well, Father Christopoulos replied.
I sighed.
Oh my gods, then why all this? I demanded and waved at their grave visages.
We need to talk to you about your future, Father Ellis replied.
Now? After our home was just destroyed?
Our home was destroyed because you left the boundaries, another of the priests, Father Renoir, replied coolly. He was probably my least favorite staff member.
Rennie, Father Ellis said gently, this is a delicate situation.
What are you talking about? I asked. So I left the boundaries for 10 minutes. Am I being expelled for it? The nymphs go to town every weekend.
My dear, Father Ellis approached, this all exists because of you. The school, the orphanage, and property.
I waited, not understanding.
Once every other generation or so, a very special woman comes along.
Father Christopoulos started.
Someone with great power that rivals the gods.
Yeah, the Oracle of Delphi who becomes the bridge between humans and gods, I recited from class. They found the new one. Again. There had been 5 new oracles found the past year alone, though they all turned out to be frauds.
"Focus, Alessandra," Father Christopoulos said with tried patience. "You are about to learn how different the world is from the sanctuary we created here, from the education we've given you. We brought you here to protect you from gods and men, to teach you how to survive in a world that wishes you crippled so they can use you. We wanted you to be the strong woman you are, so you can bring back the old ways and save our people from the wrath of the gods."
"You aren't making sense," I said, with a glance at Father Ellis. He was patient with me, the reason I preferred to deal with him.
"The Oracle is captured and held in a state of tortured suspension, Lyssa," Father Ellis said. "Every second of her life is filled with pain and suffering. She is kept immobilized physically and her powers harnessed for use by gods and politicians, to keep the bridge between the world of the gods and our Earth open, to use her power to suppress the people. The process is one of excruciating pain, but without her, the gods cannot draw off their sources of power and interfere with human affairs."
I listened, able to follow Father Ellis's explanation better than Father Christopoulos's. 12 years ago, her successor was accidentally found during a raid and brought to us. We have protected her since then, sheltered her, and most importantly,